Good morning, Rabotaya. We're continuing our study of Eshet Chayil. We're in the fourth pasuk, Darishah Semer. We're talking about the subject of Ahava. As we've learned, Ahava is expressed in giving our time, in giving our attention, in giving our words, in giving our ears. Ahava is also expressed sometimes by not falling into negativity that unfortunately parents easily can fall into without realizing. One of the ways to show someone Ahava is by not belittling them. It's not possible to show someone love and at the same time you show them disrespect. Even a little child feels when they are not being respected. Not being respected doesn't mean that they're going to be the leaders of the home. But it means not to be mezalzel, not to belittle somebody. The famous story about the great stipler, Alav HaShalom, is a very holy man. He was a man that many, many Jews flocked to his home to get blessings and advice. And one day they see him walking in to a bar mitzvah of what seemed to be a random boy from a random family, meaning they weren't related to him, they're not his neighbors. It was unusual to see the stipler by a bar mitzvah altogether. It was unusual to see him at a bar mitzvah, especially of a boy that's didn't seem to have any connection. They see him walking in and he goes over to the boy. He tells him Mazal Tov and he asks him for an apology. Very strange thing. Was he asking for an apology? Basically, sometime before, when the boy was still a minor, a katan, he was praying in the same shul as his stipler on Yom Kippur. And he had a big book that he was reading from during the tefillah. Noticing the big book, the rabbi told him that Yom Kippur is not a time to learn. It's a time to focus on tefillah. He thought that he was holding a Gemara during the prayer. He told him it's not the time now. Learning is great, but not now. And the boy showed the rabbi that it wasn't a Gemara. It was a very big Sidur. No, maybe he had issues with his eyes. So the stipler waited to ask him forgiveness. Why didn't he ask him at the time, at the moment? Because when you're a minor, you don't have the ability yet to forgive. You don't have yet the mental capacity to be able to say, I forgive. You could say it, but it doesn't count. So the stipler was waiting for this young boy to become bar mitzvah so he would be able to ask him for forgiveness. That's called respect. One would say, he's a little kid, big deal. I'm a big man, he's a little kid. It'll pass. But one of the ways you give people respect is that you do not belittle them. You do not embarrass them. And if God forbid you did, because sometimes we make mistakes, like even the stipler didn't realize. At the very least, own up to it and ask forgiveness. There's nothing wrong with asking forgiveness. When a person makes a mistake, that's one of the ways we show ahava. When we show that we care about the person's feelings and we do our best not to make them feel low. There are many types of instances that parents find themselves in, and without realizing, they belittle their children or grandchildren. Person has to know that you can't embarrass a child. Sometimes when a child is doing something wrong, it's very natural for a father or mother, who of course love him, but they express their feelings in a very strong way, where they belittle the child, where they call him names, where they call him all types of, you're irresponsible, you don't care, you're this, you're that, you're lazy, you're all types of words that parents could use. Of course, the reason why they're using it is because they think they're giving their children hezuk. They're giving them strength. Usually when you speak very strong like that, you get quick results. When you yell and scream and you call someone a very strong name, you will find very quick results. So that's why it's very appetizing for a person to use such words. But you have to know it's forbidden to belittle somebody. It's forbidden to call a child by names. A person has to be very careful when they reprimand them, that it has to be focused on the action and focused on the solution and not focused on their personality. One has to be super careful not to embarrass children in front of others. Those others could be their own siblings. Just because you have an issue with one child, that doesn't become a family affair. It's very hard to do that. Because very often in the home, everyone's together. You have to have self-control. If you have something strong to say to a kid because he did something wrong, you have to be careful that it doesn't become the talk of the home. Brothers are not the same people. So therefore, if you're giving rebuke, proper rebuke, to one child about something he did in front of another one, you're embarrassing them. And sometimes it's considered embarrassment in public when there are few people around. Very serious offense. It's very hard to do, because when you're living in your home, you feel like ahad, we're all one. So we could talk about everything, we could share everything. That's not true. You can't share everything. Just because one kid did something wrong, not everyone else has to know about it. It takes a lot of control. It takes a lot of self-control for a person to scout out the situation and keep quiet till the right time. But again, it's another way of showing kavod to somebody. Imagine going over to your son an hour later when it's private and say, listen, I wanted to tell you something an hour ago, but it wasn't. I don't want to say it in front of your brothers. That alone is a tremendous sign of respect and shows ahava, that I care about your feelings. So I came to tell you now. You're starting in a much stronger footing than when you just say whatever you want in front of anybody who's there. It's a lack of respect to embarrass somebody. The kid's saying to himself, how can you love me and embarrass me in front of my family? How does that work? So while, of course, you're doing it out of love, but that's not what the broadcast is saying. So we've discussed, Baruch Hashem, in the last few days, a lot of different strategies to show someone ahava. But now we go into the warning. There's a warning here. Beware. Like every good product, there's a warning. This good product called showing someone ahava as a very big sign on it says, warning, caution, beware. There is in this area of ahava a very, very big danger. And if you don't know about it and you misuse your ahava, you will get the opposite results that you're looking for. So like every good thing in life that Hashem made, there's always going to be a way to misuse it. In Hebrew, there's something, the word called mefunak, pinuk. Mefunak or pinuk is referring to someone, in English, they say the word is spoiled. What does it mean that I spoiled my children? And what are the effects if I indeed spoil them? Why would I spoil them? Spoiling something means you take something good, healthy, strong, happy, and then you do something, you pour on it some not good liquid, and you spoil it. When you spoil something, throw in the garbage. Used to be good. So here we're trying to build up somebody through ahava, this perfume that makes someone great, and yet this same liquid can become the spoiler of the person. What is the difference between giving my children love or giving my children something that spoils them? What is healthy love and what is love that spoils? If you don't know the line, if you don't know the difference, so you are endangering the very mission that you're looking to achieve. In simple translation, because the word spoil doesn't really do the job, like many times in life, translations or words don't really explain what we're talking about. What does it mean when I spoil somebody? So it means that I make sure that this person, this child, is not going to struggle. As a caring father and mother, I don't want my kids to struggle, because I view my job as a father and mother is to give my children happiness. Since my job is to give my children happiness, so therefore, when they struggle, so I'm not doing my job. Because as they struggle, they're not happy. Or they're not feeling the full strength of happiness. So therefore, I have to make sure that they don't struggle so that I can fulfill my job of making them happy. So there are two points here that we need to focus on in this calculation that every father and mother makes. Also good teachers or not so good teachers. Good meaning, well-meaning. But very often, they're not doing their job. We have to break down what is going on in the parents' mind that brings them to spoil their children. So if we break it down, we see there are two nekudot here. There are two points. Point number one is that I, as a father and mother, my job is to make my children happy. That's number one point. I see that the purpose of life is to be happy. And it's my job to give them that happiness until they're on their own. That's point number one. Point number two is that the easier I make their life, the more I give them when they want, the happier they will be. These are the two points that automatically come in a person's mind. Let's review them. Point number one, the mission of life, our mission needs to be, when we make decisions in life, the goal always has to be, what's going to make me happy? That's how we make life decisions. What's going to make me enjoy life more? So every time I make a decision, I have to think about, well, what am I going to enjoy? A or B? And that's how I make choices, because the purpose of life is to be happy. So therefore, I have to always make sure that I choose happiness. And since the purpose of life is to be happy, I, as a parent, have an obligation to my children that they should be happy. If I'm not going to be responsible for their happiness, which is the purpose of life, so what else am I there for? It's the number one item. That's point number one. Point number two, now that we moved on, that the purpose of life is to be enjoying and happy at every moment. Happy, I don't mean simha. Happy means, in this context, enjoy. So since the purpose of life is enjoyment, so the more I give them when they want something, the less challenges that they have to deal with, the less struggles that they will have, we will be able to land the plane of enjoyment. Enjoyment is the purpose, and it's my obligation to figure that out for them. And the more I fulfill their desires, the happier they will be. These are the two points that normal people will think about, consciously or subconsciously. And that brings them to want to make sure that their children have very little to struggle with. They don't like to see their children upset. They don't like to see their children in difficulty. They don't like to see their children feel that they're missing something. They don't like to see their children cry. They want to make sure that they hold their hand every step of the way to make sure they're comfortable, to make sure that everything is secure, to make sure everything is in the right atmosphere. It will give them whatever they ask, whatever they want. Of course, I'm going to give it to them, whatever I can afford, because they need to enjoy. So I have to give them whatever they need or whatever they think they need. This is the pattern that unfortunately many of us fall in out of tremendous care and love for our children. Without even realizing, we fall into this trap and we end up ruining our children. And we pay a very big price, and even worse is that they pay a big price. Where is the mistake in this calculation? I made a calculation. There's a formula here. Enjoyment is the purpose of life. I am here to give them enjoyment. And when I give them things and make life easier for them, they will enjoy. Where did I get anything wrong here? It's a formula. So we need to break down every step of the formula. Number one, the purpose of life is not enjoyment. In reality, simha, inner joy and inner satisfaction, is also not the purpose. It is the result. Those who look for enjoyment will have a very hard time reaching enjoyment. It's actually counterproductive to make decisions in life based on what you enjoy. When you decide things in life based on what you enjoy, what will happen is you will end up spoiling your ability to enjoy. While happiness and even enjoyment is something we all strive for, but we must always remember it's a result. It's not how we make decisions. When you make good decisions in life, when you make correct decisions in life, not necessarily the one that was easier, not necessarily the one that you wanted. When you make smart, wise, good decisions, maybe the harder decision. It was harder to wake up early than to wake up late. It was harder to pay attention in school than it was to be a bum. It was harder to be respectful of your wife than it was to be ignoring her. Forget what's more enjoyable. When you decide based on what you enjoy, you usually follow your feelings. And feelings are completely unreliable. Feelings could be for the wrong things. And therefore, when you go with your feelings, you're basically in a zone of danger because you don't know if your feelings are correct. As you know, our feelings change all the time. Sometimes we're into something. 10 minutes later, we fell out. Feelings are not yatsiv. They're not sturdy. They're not solid. And feelings are unreliable. You could feel hatred for somebody, and there's really no good reason. I just feel that way. Why do you feel that way? I don't know. I just get a bad vibe. Feelings are unreliable. I told you once, a guy told me very proudly. He obviously didn't come to this place. Very proudly, he told me he has a motto in life. Young guy. He has a motto in life. What's his motto? His motto is, whenever I have to make decisions, I always follow my heart. Now, you're saying that with very strong conviction and pride, as if he was telling me one of the Ten Commandments that he himself found out on his own, all of 20 years is in this world, and he realized, just follow your heart. You can never go wrong, he told me. Sounds so nice. You can never go wrong. If you just follow your heart will always lead you to the right place. You know how many people think that? What could I answer this here? What can I tell him? He was so deep in his nonsense. I just said three words. I said, for you, we could say from now, Baruch Dayan Emet. Who is that? I had to give him a little shock. I said, we don't have to wait. You can say it from there.
Oh.
I said, you want to guarantee failure in life? Follow your heart. Whatever your heart wants, whenever it wants, your heart wants to sleep a little more, go for it. Your heart wants to go here, go. You want to smoke a little, go with your heart. Go for it. Your heart wants you to scream now? Go all out. Just follow your heart. It's a guaranteed road to Gehinnom in this world. You don't have to wait till Olam Haba. You can get a strong taste of it in this world. Follow your heart. What kind of... Again, it seems flowery and beautiful and nice. The heart, and follow it. It's never... all words... But obviously, you don't have to be a genius, don't be a big rabbi for this, to know it's obviously wrong.
No.
While clearly the world was created for us to enjoy. That is the actual purpose of the Creator. Is that we should be able to enjoy our life. Not only in this world, but for eternity. And it should be the mission of every father and mother that their children should be people who enjoy their life here and for eternity. Yeah. But that cannot be how we make decisions. It cannot be that decisions are made by using, is this going to make me enjoy or not? That doesn't add up to the result that we want. You make decisions with enjoyment in mind, you actually make yourself less able to enjoy. In the words of the Torah and Chachamim, we find that parents are obligated in three things. Father is obligated to teach his son Torah. You're obligated to teach your children wisdom. That's your obligation. You're obligated to teach them a trade so that they're able to sustain themselves physically in this world. And you have to teach them and train them how to have midot tovot, good character. You see them angry, help them become more calm. You see them jealous, help them become more satisfied. It's a lot of work. Those are the three areas. Teach them wisdom, teach them a trade, and help them develop good character. Nowhere does it say a father is obligated to bring enjoyment to his children's life. The item that probably people think about, number one, it's not even mentioned in our books. Nowhere does it say a father is obligated to make things for his children to enjoy life. Doesn't say that. You're not obligated. So point number one, all of it is a mistake from beginning to end. Number one is that the purpose from the way we make decisions is enjoyment? Wrong. Number two, that your obligation as a parent is for them to enjoy is also wrong. And if you ask, how come you're not obligated that they should enjoy their life? Must be that the three things that we mentioned are actually the way to get them to enjoy. When you teach them wisdom, and you teach them how to succeed physically by having a trait, and you teach them how to have good character, so then you've given them the formula of enjoyment. There is no separate item called give them enjoyment. Give them A plus B plus C, and those three together equal enjoyment. Teach them the wisdom of life, teach them how to earn, and teach them how to have and have good character. You're good. Who can go wrong with such a formula? That's number one. Number two, the second assumption was, the more I give them, so the more they will enjoy. This is clearly a mistake. Chachamim, in their beautiful way, say it like this, that if a person has 100, he's hungry for 200. When he has 200, meaning 200 means he's hungry for another 100. You have 100, you want 2, means you're hungry for one more. When you have 200, now you're hungry for 400. You got hungrier. Used to be, you're only hungry for 100. Now you're hungry for 2. En adam yotze min ha'olam v'hasita v'tov v'yado, which means you never leave in this world. Nobody leaves this world with having even half of what he wanted. Which means if you wanted 1,000 things, maximum, you get 499. Maximum. You're never going to get even half of what you really desired in this world. So the reality is, actually, that the more you give them to enjoy, you're actually making them enjoy less. The more you give them, the more hungry they become. And the more thirsty they become. So you're actually doing the opposite of your goal. Even if your goal is to give them pleasure and enjoyment, let's say that was your goal. We already proved that shouldn't be your goal. Well, let's say that's your goal. But you're going about it the wrong way. Because by keeping on and on to give them whatever they want, you're actually making them more hungry and therefore more needy and therefore enjoy life less. Ohev kesef lo yisba kesef. There's no such thing as being satisfied from the enjoyment of this world. The more you get, the more hungry you become. And the more frustrated of a person that you become. This is the trap for loving parents. They feel obligated to give their children enjoyment, and therefore they spend their life trying to protect their children from all the things that make them uncomfortable. They try to give them anything that they ask for. If they cry, it's an automatic yes. If they feel sad, it's automatically done. Because they see the wrong obligation as a father and mother. Our job, in fact, is to teach them how to enjoy life with boundaries. Actually, you could only enjoy with boundaries for a different time. Our job is to give them the ability to fight the struggles, not to fight it for them, but to give them the ability to go through the things that are disappointing, to go through situations that are difficult. Because if you don't do that, as they get older, what you're doing is basically setting them up for failure. Because when you protect them and give them everything they want at a young age, so when they get older and then they see that real life isn't as comfortable and not everybody's coming to fulfill your desires like your parents taught you, so then they become extremely desperate and weak and don't know how to handle themselves. And of course, they will fail on many different levels because you didn't give them the chance to fight for themselves, to deal with the struggles, to be able to find the muscle that it takes to deal with things in life. When you don't get what you want, that you could still be happy. You taught them that you could only be happy when you get what you want. So now what happens in life when they don't get what they want, which is going to happen every day? Every day there are things happening not the way we want. So they've been taught by their parents that means you can't be happy. Because you taught them that in every situation where they want something, in order for them to be happy, is that they have to get it. That was the underlying message. Why did I give you when you cry? Because if I don't give you, you're not going to be happy. Why did I give you when you asked me, even though you know I didn't really want to give it to you? Because I want to make you happy. So the underlying message that you gave your children is to be happy in life. You need to have whatever you want. And now when they don't have whatever they want, which is for everybody, it's not only about money, it's many, many things. When you don't have what you want, automatically you've been trained to be unhappy. Because that's what you've been taught. Besides that you're weak and you don't know how to struggle and you don't know how to fight because you were never given the muscle because they were always protecting you and holding your hand. Besides that you become a weak human being. But maybe even worse, you automatically understand your situation in life as a situation of unhappiness. Because you've been taught very clearly by the people who care about you most. Who else is reliable? Who's more reliable than your parents who taught you this message? Happiness is when you get everything you want. And now you go into the world and you don't know what to do with yourself. Because everything in life is a reason to be unhappy. I don't have this. I don't have that. But wait, but you have this. And you have that. And you also have this. And you're... Nobody has everything, people will tell you. How many times you heard that? Who has everything? But that's not what this kid was taught. The lessons he got for many years was that you need to have everything. Otherwise, you can't be happy. And that's called spoiling not only his ability to be happy, but spoiling his understanding of how a person can be happy. You don't have to have everything in life to be happy. There are ways to be happy in every situation. That's a gift, the real gift. If you really love your children, you give them the real gift, which is showing them how to deal with life and how to be happy in every one of the situations that they're in. Instead of protecting them from the things that are bothering them, teach them how to live with them, beat them, and even enjoy life as they're happier. That is the gift that you give them if you truly show them ahava. If your ahava is shown by fulfilling all their needs and protecting all their struggles, you turned the ahava, the perfume of ahava, you turned it into the spoiling liquid that will make them very, very difficult to survive in a happy way in this world that they're in.
ברוך הלאה לעולם, אמן ואמן.